The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
I gave my life meaning from the time I was a kid by helping people, saving people, fixing people, pastoring people. So I kind of had and developed a Messiah complex. I went from pastoring people and kind of feeling good about myself as a validation, identification. I'm good and I can pacify my self-hatred as long as I'm helping people. When that went away, I think I subconsciously replaced it with the podcast and I became an atheist pastor. The cool thing is yeah, people were helped, but I did begin to realize I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fix people. I'm not responsible for anybody.
It's a wonderful chaos, even if they're random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest and fight to find peace, both head and the heart.
Like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos.
I can't be bothered.
We have got the coolest guest on today. This guest has been an inspiration to me. I did my tour. I traveled the U.S. I sent out random messages to people and said, hey, I like that your podcast. Would you be willing to have me on and talk about the Last Letter tour? Cass saw it and thought I was a dick and said, I really don't like people like this in general, but why not? Because I haven't got anyone better. I don't know if he'd phrase it that way, but I think he kind of is allergic to people that are self-promoting. And he said he couldn't quite tell whether I was self-promoting or doing something meaningful, but he gave me a shot. We did the episode on Everyone's Agnostic. I love the episode. Out of all of the interviews I did, it was the most meaningful, the most connected. He understood me immediately what I was all about, and he brought in beautiful elements. Like he used the mic in the Mechanics song, Say It Loud, Say It Clear, Whisper As Long As You Hear. Basically, the song that's about acting with urgency and love immediately and not waiting till your father's gone to tell him you love him. And he understood what my intentions were, and we just had a nice relationship, and we kept contact for the next year, year and a half, 2 years afterwards. And it's just people like this that I bring into my life. So I talked way too much before we introduced him. He decided to end his podcast and he did it abruptly. And we're going to discuss with him what leads someone to do that. So I followed Cass after we had our interaction. He's from a different part of the U.S. than I am. He's from Tennessee. And if we're going to say it's more of a conservative for those that are not from the U.S. compared to the more liberal places I came from in California. He has more of a liberal bent to him, which means that he is also in sort of a, I don't know what you say. He's not swimming in his own water. He's swimming in somebody else's pond. If he was in L.A., he'd be considered probably normal, maybe not even that liberal. But in Tennessee, he's pretty radical as far as I'm concerned. And as we did the show, you know how we work on A Wonderful Chaos. It everything sort of emerges.
Yeah.
We did a show a few days ago and our guest didn't show up and our show became The Power of Silence and we were quiet for an hour online.
40 minutes
because we did talk a little bit before. And one of the things that I love in life is that serendipity moment when things just feel good and you move down a direction. And after Cass had finished his last gig with Everyone's Agnostic, this incredible podcast had over 500,000 downloads, and said, I'm done, I'm over, and just left it. And I thought, wow, maybe he'd be interested in supporting our work and editing it and making a beautiful song, which he's created, and just making it special, something that other people would enjoy. And he just jumped on it. So that's where our relationship is. And I was deeply curious to get him on and discuss leaving a show that's so popular, doing so well after, I believe, 4 years, how do you move on from that? Like, what do you say no to? Where do you let go? And what does it create as a possibility? And when I told him this is a topic, he sent me this Wikipedia, or he did send me a Wikipedia thing. It was amor fati is a Latin phrase that may be translated as love of fate or love of one's fate. It is used to describe an attitude in which one sees everything that happens in one's life, including suffering, loss, as good or at least necessary. And when he sent that to me, I thought it was beautiful. I felt a little bit like a Buddhist sort of practice to me. I felt that there was one thing I would say. It says here, it sees everything that happens in life, including suffering, loss, as good. I would just say it is as it is.
Yeah, you don't like using good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. You know me. So that is it. And I'd love to welcome him on and just shower him in adoration.
Compliment purgatory now.
You're in compliment purgatory. You know everything. You edit all of our shows, so there's nothing we can say you haven't already heard.
No, I haven't heard them all. So, but the ones I've heard, I've fallen in love with you guys.
I love that.
It's really it's fun. I mean, it's more it's fun. It's changed my life, and it's as we used to say in Bible times, or in not in Bible times, but when I was a Christian, I was edified.
Wow, that's a big word. That's like a building word. So tell me what the definition of edified is, because you read far more than Bombos or myself, I think.
Well, it's just lifted up, strengthened, educated, stretched.
Oh, wow. You know, I really see you as a special person. You know that.
Well, likewise.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, when we interacted and I saw how you got me so quickly, there was a fondness that I had for you.
And he doesn't stop talking about you, Cass. Like, I think on a daily basis, your name pops up.
There's definitely a bromance going on.
Yeah, there's a bromance there.
Yeah, so, I think I heard the intro, and I remember a little bit about what... So, I don't like woo-woo. It's self-promotion, maybe that's another way of putting it, but I don't like... As somebody that's kind of come out of a really bad experience with Christianity or just magical thinking... And my transition took me from Christianity to like The Secret. And, you know, so yeah. I went spiritual, you know, for a while, and I still hold to a lot of Buddhist principles. But anyway, it was, I guess self-promotional may have been the thing that I smacked of like a, of a motivational speaker or something.
Yes. But in spite of that, you still brought me on, which I'm grateful for.
Well, and yeah, and you won me over. Your honesty, even to this day, your honesty, your insight, your intuition is maybe unprecedented in all the people I've ever met in my life. I mean, like, you're a real standout when it comes to being able to read people and kind of sense what's going on. And then you shoot straight. You shoot straighter than anybody I've ever met.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I second that. So you're in compliment purgatory now.
Yeah. I'm learning to accept it. It's not easy to accept compliments. You know, when you've been beaten down by anyone in your life, you have that voice that really stops you from just embracing the love. But I'm getting over that, thank God. Or not God in your case, because you're non-believer. So what do I think in that case? I thank who? Myself?
Yeah, that's all there is yourself.
Thank you very much.
Thank me very much. That's what you'd say. Thank me very much.
We sometimes say the universe, but the universe is not. I think the universe is out to kill us.
Yeah, I would think we're out to kill the universe.
Yeah, but I can tell you who's going to win that battle.
Oh, so how many years did you do Everyone's Agnostic?
5.5.
5.5 years. And you got big. Sure. I mean, you were, when I did research, you nod your head, but when I did research at what were the top spiritual shows in that genre, you were in 5 categories. So you actually were known as one of the go-to podcasts for spirituality, actually. Yeah.
And I think what's exciting too is that I haven't produced or published a episode since October of 19, and yet my numbers have gone up.
Yeah, you said that with COVID, you've had more downloads than any other time in the history of the show.
The COVID months, July went back down slightly, but March, April, May, June were all spikes.
Yeah.
Because of, captive audience, I think. Also, I think that the number of people that are questioning their faith and possibly leaving the faith is going up thanks to Trump. And for a lot of people, it's a very, very traumatic experience. It's very painful. It's very scary. You lose friends and family.
So you really feel like you're holding people's hand in some ways through the podcast.
100%. That's beautiful. Yeah. And it's just there to help them not feel crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm lucky enough to have been raised and born in a liberal location. Mm-hmm. So my sensitivity wasn't a problem.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Oklahoma and then moved out here as an adult to Tennessee, Nashville. And both states are red and conservative and Trump. And sometimes I just want to, I don't know. I want to move, I'll tell you that.
You want to praise the Lord.
Yes. I've got a weird question. So you did years of Bible bashing.
I've been out of Christianity for over 10 years, and it's no wonder. I mean, one of the stages of grief is anger. So I'm going to give myself that. Yeah. Fucking bashed it, hated it. And I to this day, I think it's a toxic influence on society.
Yeah. Okay. But let's tell me how you really feel.
Yeah.
What did you know what I've noticed is that you and another person who we've both had on the show, Stephen Palmer, I've had you both meet because I found you guys very similar. He left the Mormon church. You left the Catholic church. And what I saw was Christian church. When you guys left, there was an incredible animosity towards the religion. It wasn't that you moved on. There was a deep, deep resentment towards the religions you guys left.
Yeah.
And where does that come from?
Well, you can't get those years back. You can't get that money back. You can't get that arrested development back. Well, you can work on the arrested development, but you've been duped. I mean, you feel lied to, and you feel like and it's a big fucking deal. And the reason that you can't get out is because it's been going on for 2,000 years. There's a church on every corner. There's volumes and volumes of books and everything. And there's cathedrals all over the world, all in the name of Jesus. And so you're just like, well, how can all these millions of people and generations and millennia go by in support of Jesus and belief of Jesus? And I come along, little old me, and say, I've got some doubts. And you just feel really small. And then once you really do kind of cross over into like, no, this is really bullshit, then you find yourself in a bizarre world to where, half the world is still duped by the very thing that you're like coming out of. And here you find yourself.
I mean, and you not only were in the church, you were a minister in the church.
Yeah. Radical minister.
You were a radical minister?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was my all. I mean, from the time that I was 16 till I was 39, Jesus was my all in all. I didn't live for anything else other than to advance the kingdom of God on earth as it is in heaven, to populate heaven, to evangelize, to educate and to make disciples. That's all I cared about. In fact, had I followed my mom's advice as a senior in high school to go into computers in 1983, I'd be a rich man. But it didn't have anything to do with the kingdom.
So you really were fighting for the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, everything else was trivial and going to fade out. It's going to fade away. And I was all about eternal things, not temporal things.
And what moment did it like click? Like, okay, this isn't it.
Well, when I got to college, I had a philosophy course that just rattled my faith, and I ended up having coffee with the professor like several times. One time, all night long, we talked.
Wow.
So I really wrestled then, but I held my nose and doubled down.
Do you still have any contact with that professor?
I don't. I wish I did. I don't even remember his name.
I still have contact with one professor from college, and it's the one who taught me philosophy. He's in both books even.
And he's coming on our show, right?
No, he's not. No. He's a bit too strong, I would say. He's too serious.
Oh.
Yeah.
While we were getting ready, Bombos commented on he liked my wall.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with this term, sapiophile. Sapio, you could be sapiosexual, which means you're sexually attracted to intelligence.
But
sapiophile is you're just attracted to it in general. I'm a sapiophile. So smart people and their quotes have always just been my thing. And so I'm going to take this. You can see the whole wall's covered with quotes.
I don't see Andy there.
Yeah, where's my picture?
Yeah.
You know what mine would say? Get a life.
Yours would say get a life. So, speaking of that, that is like what I felt like I had to do once I, you know, because in Christianity, you deny your life. You deny yourself. You don't have a life. In fact, the more submitted you are as like a slave and a servant, the better a Christian you are. So anyway,
I've often found this is the interesting thing on anyone. I would say in any – so we're talking about religion now, but it might be someone doing a training or getting wrapped up in some spiritual organization or even an education system, that I always find it curious that at some point there's the reaction to it, the fight against the thing, like, oh, now I'm resentful towards that thing. And I always think to myself, you're still trapped because as long as you're
– very well can good, be. Yeah.
Or it's bad, then all of a sudden you're stuck in the idea of you're fighting against the system instead of just being at peace with the fact that it existed in my life and it's no longer there.
Yeah. It's a real thing to get stuck there. Embittered, resentful, and you're just kind of in a cycle of...
So tell me five things that you're grateful for from the church.
Wow. Well, I do have a vast knowledge of the Bible, which is kind of fun. And, you know, I was thinking the other day there was a... Whether it's sheep herders or carpenters, first century, Bronze Age, prophets, wisdom is wisdom, no matter where it comes from.
Yeah.
And so every now and then those guys got it right. And so instead of just throwing out the baby Jesus with the bathwater, there's every now and then a quote comes to mind or a proverb comes to mind and it's dead on. Who knew?
Yeah. I think if you look at all the religions, you know, there's this overlap of values that are shared in them that you think, they make sense. And yet now we've indoctrinated and put rules on them. And now all of a sudden we have to believe the entire picture instead of just taking away the things that actually are quite valuable to life.
Right. Yeah. And you get good at smorgasbording it after a while.
Yeah, I think so.
At first. So I'm going to preface a disclaimer here. What I'm about to say is I'm not comparing being a part of a dogmatic organization to sexual rape in its trauma and its experience and in its depth. However, the similarities are you've been invaded. You've been penetrated. And you have let it into your heart and life. And it has woven its tentacles into every facet of your life. It's the lens through which you see the world. It's what you think about when you get up and go to bed. It's everything. And then when you find out that he or she, let's just go with he because he was a fraud and he fucked you. He fucked you and he raped you. And now you have PTSD. Wow. That's just all there is to it. Now, it's different than any other PTSD, but it's real. It's trauma.
Yeah.
And that's, I wouldn't have had a show and thousands of listeners, and I still get email from people saying, you saved my life. Those are some, you'd think that was hyperbolic, but it may be a little bit, but they're really grateful for a lifeline.
So I must say, when you spoke it just now, I think it was the first time I understood the pain behind it.
Okay.
Like in your words, because a lot of times you've spoken about it and it's been rationalized. And now I almost saw the tears. And for me, it was like, oh, wow, that's how deep it goes. That's how I don't have a contact with that for myself.
Right. So what we have found in the ex-Christian community, which, by the way, is a very powerful and large, beautiful community.
Cass, what? How did that land? What Andy just said before we go.
Let me slow down.
Yeah.
I'm glad to somehow have got in touch with it enough to illustrate it, the pain, so that it's visible to others. That's helpful because otherwise people are like, get over it. And there is a level of get over it. But what I was going to say in the Christian ex-Christian community is that we, at first we kind of tried to meld with the atheist community. And the thing about the atheist community is that for the most part, they've been atheists their whole lives. or at minimal, they were not traumatized by religion. They thought it was silly from the get-go, even if they were, even if they said the sinner's prayer and called themselves a Christian for a few years or whatever. It just, it was a Christian light. They never bought in. They never sold everything to have it. So we found that we did not relate to people who had not been through what we'd been through. The only thing that we relate to is people that have been, who were real radical Christians, devout.
Wow.
And then lost it. Those are the people that we cling to.
Hmm. I must say something, which I don't think I've ever discussed on the show before, but I'm like, when it comes to atheism, for me, it's just another belief. So in that sense, Catholics or atheists, for me, they're still believers of something.
Yeah, but no, it's not the way I don't look at it. Like I believe that there is no God. I just don't have any evidence that there is one. So I don't.
Yeah,
I
was validating your point, by the way. So actually, sticking with everyone's agnostic, the title of your podcast, there's been an aspect for me that's kind of humorous, is that if someone says to me, "Hey, you're an atheist," you know, like if they do that to me, I laugh, say no, because then I need to believe something, right? So it's hard for someone.
I'm pushing back against that, because you don't have to believe something. It's the absence of beliefs.
It's been humorous my whole life. I've been interacting with these individuals that want to force you into a box. So if you don't believe this, then it must be that you're that. The labels, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a side remark that I just found quite curious based on what you were talking about.
It's common.
Yeah.
It feels to me, I'm sitting here and watching you, Cass, and it feels like you're really doing a dance with your body as you're talking. And it's like, it feels like it's really moving through you or something. Mm.
Yeah. I'm excited to be here. And I'm a drummer. I've always like just been, my leg, I'm trying not to bounce my leg because I think it would bounce the camera.
Details.
We've got a few comments coming in. Dave Warnock, who's also going to be on the show.
Yeah.
He's saying we strike back at it because it's still hurting people. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. True that. It's still hurting people.
Yeah, we have Bolalang, who he only chimes in when he's excited about a show early on. So you got him. There's a freedom in someone being able to change their mind as many times as when they get new information. Yeah.
Right.
And then he says,
religion is manipulation. Once in it, it's difficult to break free, even though you have doubts. Once you break away from it, you feel empathy and those still struggling within it.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bolalang is one of our thoughtful listeners. He writes things very precisely and very thoughtfully. So we always enjoy Bolalang's comments.
Yeah. So can I get to the topic of leaving your past behind? Because I think
I'd love it. We're only 20 minutes into the show, Cass. Okay. We got 40 minutes to fill here.
Well,
37.
I think one of the reasons why Christianity registered with me so much is that I had, and I think it might just be kind of come with the package of insecurity. When a kid, you know, a child, a baby, they're completely conscienceless of what people think, their nudity or they don't really care about anybody, what they think of them. And then as they get older, it begins to matter how I look and how I sound and am I impressing people and do people like me? And these things just begin to creep in and I hate it. It's the loss of innocence, but it's real. And then Christianity comes along. And if you have any level of like self-hatred or self-disdain, or I've made a ton of mistakes in my life and they're just huge cringe moments in my memory. And they became a calendar of just reminders of what an asshole I am and how stupid I am, et cetera, et cetera. So when Christianity came along and said, you are a sinner and you're lost and you deserve eternal punishment, I was like, yep, that's me.
Wow.
But I'm going to save you from yourself and give you a new heart and a new life and I'm going to come inside you. I'm going to live my life through you vicariously. And I'm going to empower you with my Holy Spirit. And you're going to be able to, your life's going to change. Sign me up. So the reason that I bring that up in this context of leaving the past behind is now that I've taken off the cloak of Christianity, guess who's there waiting for me? That little 17-year-old guy that I hated. And so having to like have compassion on him. I love David Rico, Dr. David Rico. He has 32 declarations of healthy adulthood. And one of them is if I observe someone's behavior without compassion, I have not understood it.
Yeah, I'm so into that. Can we stay with that one for, I mean, I just want to slow down. Yeah. I want to like let that one, if you observe someone's behavior without compassion, how did it end then?
You have not understood it.
You haven't understood it. I say this in so many different ways.
Right.
Throughout the show, obviously, and in my life, but that's a beautiful way of phrasing it.
I've got a little story that's kind of a metaphor of that. That Mindy and I went to a concert, and we were trying to find our seats, kind of up in this tiered stadium seats. And, you know, it was kind of sparse up there, and our seats were like here, but we saw some seats down closer, and they were empty, and the show was about to start, so we thought, let's just go down there. And there was this guy. He had his leg fully extended to his left, filling two extra chairs. And we kind of came up and we thought maybe when he saw us, he would move his leg, but he didn't. And so I thought, what an asshole. And so, you know, we found some other seats. And then after like an intermission or after the show or something, we saw that underneath his jeans, he had a full leg cast. I did not understand it, because I didn't look at his behavior with compassion.
Wow.
Anyway, so.
Well, I mean, that's beautiful, because I would say, you know, when I work with people, I'm often saying when they start reacting, they're usually regressing to an earlier like persona of themselves, right? If someone's really. And so I'm always wondering, why do people take the other person so seriously if it's a 13-year-old they're interacting with? Because they look physically older, yes, we tell ourselves the story that, oh, they're 40, they should be over that by now. But if you're really able to see them, right, with the compassion, you're like, wow, that's the 13-year-old version. And then if you don't project onto them all of the story that you've had, whatever, who they should be, you know, whenever I hear a should in a sentence of what behavior, my stomach drops, like, ugh.
Yeah. There's a plaque on the wall that says, today I will not should on myself.
I like that.
So when it comes to letting go of the past and moving on, I had to do a lot of work of self-acceptance, a lot of work of self-acceptance. And I think one of the things that is even to this day is kind of coming up for me is just to not take oneself too seriously. And I think the fear of death and the denial of death is kind of what drives a lot of people. It's what creates immortality projects like religion and such.
Yeah.
But if instead of like, la, 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 I'm never going to die, I'm never going to die, you just open yourself up, look right into the eye of the Grim Reaper and say, come on, baby, let's dance, knowing that your time is coming. I mean, you imagine being on an airplane that the pilot has said it's going down.
Yeah.
Are you going to complain about your tomato juice to the server? No, you're probably going to start kissing or loving or hugging the person next to you.
Yeah.
I mean, priorities go way up, right? Good priorities go way up. The fact that the tomato juice is tepid, fuck off.
So it's going to be quite some editing here.
Yeah. Right? You'll need to edit yourself out of this one. We want this child friendly. This episode has to be child friendly.
Fuck you. And I cussed in front of my children all those years, and they're great cussers to this day. Anyway, but when you look at the brevity of life, and of course, as an atheist, I see this as a one pass. My afterlife is exactly like my pre-birth. Zero consciousness. I'll never exist again in this form. Mm-hmm. And with this consciousness, my energy will go on, of course, but in carbon and worm food. But there will never be a conscious Cass Midgley like this. So this is it. This is it. And if I spend one more minute like hating myself or wishing I'd never done that, or, you know, regret having been a Christian, or wishing I had all that tithe money back or whatever. Amor Fati says, I love what is. That happened. In fact, the quote is actually from Friedrich Nietzsche.
Yeah, that's further down.
He said, I want to learn more and more to see as beautiful what is necessary in things. Now, when he says necessary, he means inevitable. I want to see it as beautiful. So if a tornado comes through and wipes out your house, he's saying that the really, really ideal high road for human evolution and mental health and emotional health is for you to say, not only go from I hate this tornado, I hate what it did to my house, to I accept what it did to my house, I tolerate what it did to my house and what it did to my belongings. I'm dealing with it. I'm coping with it. No, it was beautiful. And I love that tornado and what it did to my house. Now, I know that's extreme.
Well, I mean, it's extreme, but you haven't read the new book yet.
Yeah, I haven't.
That's what the new book is about.
The new book is all about what you're speaking towards right now. I didn't know I was a Nietzsche, but apparently that's what I've become.
Yeah.
I've evolved.
Yeah. So
did Peter Koenig get it from there?
Peter Koenig was a former guest who did the money work, and Peter was very much geared towards making peace with the thing that you resist most in yourself, right? He didn't even do that. He did it with money. So I took it a little step further, applied it in another context. But the thing is that which you resist, of course, persists, right? And
it rhymes.
Exactly. And I would even suggest that the embrace of the thing means that it no longer rattles around in your head with noise, because now you've not only made peace with it, you've actually embraced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's that stop thinking of a pink elephant. Stop thinking of a pink elephant, you know. And the mind doesn't know negative from positive. It just knows that if you're thinking about that thing, you're thinking about that thing. So, yeah, you're stuck.
But it still gets me back to the point we made earlier, which I'd just like to reaffirm in your case, is that when you say I'm now, say, anti-church, you're still stuck as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, you can think that all you want. You're free.
Well, it depends the energy that's underlying it. Let's be honest about that. It doesn't matter
Let me ask you this, Andy. Are you anti-sex trafficking?
Am I anti-sex trafficking?
You goddamn better well be.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, it just seems like a weird question to ask. But yeah, I would say I'm anti-sex trafficking. So
that's how I feel about the church. It's a factory.
Oh, wow.
It's creating people that are going to be screwed in the head for life, brainwashed.
So you see it on that level?
Well, I just see it as something worthy of being anti of.
Wow, yeah, I got it. That's pretty intense what you just said, which is cool because I never saw it in the framing that you just gave it back to us. You don't see it as a belief system which one can choose to believe in or not to believe in. You really see it as a tyrannical, manipulative, conniving whatever. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, and I know that there are soft and wonderful, like, LGBT affirming progressive Christianities out there. I've got friends that are still Christians and they're beautiful people. Somehow they've risen above the poison of it.
Yeah.
And transcended it and are good people in spite of it.
I have a feeling, though, I have a feeling that if you were I don't distinguish between Christian and Catholic. So let's just say if you're a Christian in L.A., I can't believe that it would have been as dramatic for you to leave the church as it is for you to do that in Tennessee.
No, totally. 100%. I'll give you that all day. Okay. Oklahoma and Tennessee, Christianity is very different than West Coast, East Coast.
Yeah. Got it. Interesting.
But back to this Nietzsche thing, my formula for greatness is in a human being is amor fati, that one wants nothing to be different, not forward or backward. So getting to that place where I could say, okay, you know, I made reference a second ago to, I can't get those years back, you know, can't get that money back and stuff. And because I think the multiverse is a fascinating thought project, right? So there's a universe where I didn't accept Christ as my savior at 17 or 15 or whatever I was. There's a universe where, you know, I didn't marry the woman I'm with now, and the four children we had don't exist. You know, there's a there's a universe where I bought a different car. Anyway, well, so, but this is the fucking universe I'm in. And this is like, I can't change the fact that I got into Christianity at that time. What I can change is my attitude towards it and how I live in the moment.
And you've been a beacon for all these other people who haven't had maybe the guts that you had to take the step out of religion and see there's community that can support, right? That's really your gift.
Yeah, that's part of it. Not wanting it to be different. Like that was a work. That was a work. Yeah.
So help me here to get back to our sort of theme for the show. 5.5 years you're doing this podcast. It's going great. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, one day you say, I'm going to pack it up. How does that happen?
Well, I gave my life meaning from the time I was a kid by helping and helping people, saving people, fixing people. So I kind of had and developed a Messiah complex. And so pastoring people, being up in front of people, it's strange because I relate to Johnny Carson, who himself was an introvert, and yet he was in front of millions of people every day. And I totally relate to that. Like when I was a pastor, I was up in front of hundreds of people. When I was a podcaster, I was in front of thousands of people. But my favorite place is, who was it? Camus said, hell is other people. I believe that. I mean, I just seem to be alone, strangely enough. But I went from pastoring people and kind of feeling good about myself as a validation, identification. I'm good, and I can pacify my self-hatred as long as I'm helping people. See, look at me, and I love to be in front of people. So when that went away, I think I subconsciously replaced it with the podcast, and I became an atheist pastor. And I mean, the cool thing is, people were helped. But I did begin to realize I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fix people. I'm not responsible for anybody. And I just released it. And it just had to be the right timing because, a year earlier. In fact, I mean, there was times when I even said, I'm going to just do 100 episodes and then stop. But I just couldn't do it. I loved it so much. And I might have been a junkie of my own show,
It was a daily show.
It was a weekly show.
I was going to say you had your own flock.
I did. And I still do in a way. I mean,
if you're a priest, you have a religious flock, but he had a flock that was outside of the religion that was still a flock. Yeah.
And we have, how you can have secret groups on Facebook?
Yeah.
I've got two groups on Facebook that are, they're everyone's agnostic support groups. One is international, and it only has about 400 or 500 people in it. And then there's another one that's Middle Tennessee. That's just Nashville area. And we actually, before COVID, we met up every month.
Wow.
And they get on there and they encourage each other. They get on there and they say, hey, I'm getting ready to go to Kentucky to see my family for Thanksgiving. And I think I'm going to come out. Any tips on, what's worked for you and what's backfired? So that I can go in here with some.
When we say come out, we're not talking about homosexuality here. We're talking about that we left the church.
Yeah, come out as a non-believer, a non-Christian.
Yeah, because Stephen Palmer, who was also on the show, has told me oftentimes when he left the Mormon church, he was told that he won't see his family in the afterlife. So basically, each time he goes to a family outing, he's reminded of the fact that this may be the last time they see one another. Because he's been signed out of the Book of Mormon, which allows you to gather at the back end of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. I mean, I think it's valuable to think every time you see somebody, it might be the last time.
Wouldn't it be great if we had that, but we didn't need
to. I live with that. My father died when I was 17 of cancer. And I think something shifted in me to where it's like, okay, everybody's going to die. Yeah. And especially now that my kids are young adults and and when they were starting to leave the nest, like go to college out of town or something, when they were somewhere else and I did not know where they were. Yeah. I mean, it's just like they could die on their way to see me next. I mean, it's like, it's absolutely all of it is possible. Very possible every day, all day. Yeah. So when I say goodbye to them, I know it might be the last. Now I don't over dramatize it. I'm not a very I'm not a very affectionate person. I'm not really a hugger per se, especially not COVID, but I just know I want to value, I here's the thing about carpe diem and be in the moment and stuff. I have so released myself from exterior expectations that if I don't want to be present, I'm not going to be present, and I'm okay with that. And you might not be okay with that because you want more of me.
Yeah.
I hope you're a good self-soother, because I followed Jesus's whims for the first 40 years of my life. I'm following mine now.
Wow.
And I'm 54, so I'm kind of a novice at allowing myself to be selfish.
Mm. Bola Long came back in again. It's a dangerous belief. I think it's responsible for many negatives in society that people are not aware of what they're causing. Yeah.
It almost feels like coming out of a drug addiction.
Yeah. I'm hearing more and more of associations, which I haven't till now. I haven't associated with religion. I've associated with drug addiction or sex as S-E-C-T, not S-E-X.
Right, right.
It's quite fascinating.
So here's into his point, God is in control, and he's going to, this earth is going to be thrown away like a dirty laundry garment, and a new heaven and a new earth is going to replace it. And that's all in God's plan and God's timing. And so global warming is part of God's plan. So Christians are more prone to not care about ecology. You know, Jesus is coming back. He's going to, so, you know, we can almost forego this life and the intensity and the value of everything we just talked about. We can forego it because in the afterlife is actually when things really begin. Because
wow.
I'm going to get a new body that's disease free. And that's, if you're paraplegic, that's actually really sounds really good. I'm going to see my loved ones. I'm going to be made perfect in a twinkling of an eye. I'm going to be made like Jesus. So all this down here and all this sin and debauchery and disease and COVID and, you know, all of this, this is all a result of Adam and Eve sinning and corrupting the earth. And, and this is going to fall away and die. And well, it should, because the new party is going to begin. Jesus is king. He's going to part the heavens and blow the trumpet, and I'm going to be raptured into the afterlife. So to his point, it causes people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do.
This is a topic that comes up a lot, and we're talking about the agency an individual takes over their own life, or when they outsource it to a belief because it's more convenient. And the one thing that you also told me, you had principles in your practices and in your show. And I remembered as soon as you listed them, I immediately resonated with everything you mentioned. But one of them you said was that we will take agency over our own lives and not blame another for the things we're not able to solve in ourselves.
Right. But it's a twofold thing, right? Because it is attractive because I don't have to think. Somebody's going to think for me. Just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
That can be comforting to people. And then the second thing is that when I fuck up, all I do have, I just confess it and cover the blood of Jesus over it. And it's done. It's behind me. As opposed to you're going to be held accountable for the behavior.
We've got David Warnock, who actually he'll be on our show in a few months, I think.
I guess he's watching it because
he is watching it. And he also is closer to death, at least emotionally, than all of us, I would gather.
Physically,
because his body is deteriorating at this time.
He has ALS.
He has ALS.
He's a friend of mine. He lives with me. He's in the next room.
He's in the next room smoking a cigar. Yes. And he's saying basically it's a fetish for the afterlife.
Yeah. And it pulls you out of here. Another thing, you know, there's a phrase that says, you know, good people are going to do good things. Bad people are going to do bad things. But in order to get good people to do bad things, it takes religion.
Wow.
So no. And nobody's imagination, if it weren't for, well, somebody came up with it. But it's like when we think of ways to please God, because what we're really afraid of is we have the fear of God. We're afraid of the judgment of God. We're afraid of his opposition. know, we the prayer is, you know, turn your face towards us, bless us, have favor on us, have mercy on us, have grace. And so to get God on your bad side is the ultimate no-no. And so that's why they're big on abortion. That's like, oh, you know, abortion is a stench in God's nostrils, and he will never prosper our crops. You know, he'll never bless our land. He'll never, you know, do anything as long as we're sacrificing fetuses on the altar of comfort and convenience.
But it still sounds, as you speak, I would have expected it to be a little bit numb or a little bit abstracted or conceptualized. But when you speak, I mean, I can feel like a visceral feeling that still is there for you, even if it's been this long.
It's just my personality. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, like,
well, it pisses me off. I mean, they're running the planet. They're running America, Christians.
Like both times you've kind of noted that with Cass, the response was with the fuck in it.
Yes.
Well, maybe I'm defensive, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think we're on the show right now. It's another context, how we're speaking. And as I mentioned earlier, the intensity with which you experience it is something wholly new to me. And in your intensity, I'm beginning to, for the first time, understand how deep it runs. When you haven't had the experience of another, you use mirrors that are kind of left and right because you can't see it directly. You kind of have to infer it. So when you're reactive, I can feel it in myself and I'm like, oh, wow, that's when I feel that violated. That's mm-hmm. how I'm like, wow, he's that violated. That's where I'm now experiencing that. It's that level of violation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say about it takes Christianity to make somebody do evil, like circumcision. Like whose idea was it to cut off the foreskin of a penis to please God, or even like in Islam to cut off the clitoris because it's going to give her, she'll have pleasure during sex. Yeah. And she's not supposed to enjoy sex. All of this came from God, or at least somebody's imagination of God. And we do it because we fear him. So it's like the countless evils that are done in the name of fearing a non-existent being. And if I've said this before, that atheism is the best practice of theism, because if we would just close the heavens, everybody regard the heavens as closed.
Yeah.
And stop praying, stop tithing to the church, start tithing to cancer research or ALS research, and let's get busy fixing the planet and ourselves and each other, because nobody's coming. The Calvary's not coming. God's not coming. It's just us here. And if there is a good God in the universe, and we're starting to fix things and work together and love one another and overcome our differences, he would part the heavens, blow the trumpet, and say, well done, my good and faithful servants. And it's by way of ignoring him. That's the best way to please God, is ignore him, because he's ignoring us.
Wow. I'm loving you right now.
I want to address something. I mean, Bombo said it. So I got curious about, okay, why am I being defensive? So in both cases.
Hold on. You said defensive, right? You said defensive?
No, okay. I'm the one that said defensive. He didn't say defensive.
I didn't think I heard defensive, but go ahead.
I'm the one that said it. He didn't say it. He just said, it's interesting that every time that you give feedback to Cass as to how you're experiencing him, it arouses some energy in him that produces the F-bomb. And I wonder if, because I spent so many years in a prison of outsourcing my identity and letting another source tell me who I am, that I'm a little triggered by somebody telling me who I am. Maybe.
You know, I didn't experience you as defensive, by the way, interestingly. I experienced you as fully expressive. Like, I see you embodying your emotion. I see you fully present. Yeah. I actually am loving being with you right now. And so what I'm learning from you in this experience is I'm learning something that I haven't yet seen, as I mentioned earlier, is that the depth at which one feels violated when it comes to this is now more apparent to me than it was ever before.
Good.
I would not have gotten that if you didn't embody and speak and react and be who you are right now. So It's been a really informative time for me at this moment. Yeah, kind of sad. I kind of want to cry, actually, if I go back into the feeling, because now I don't get a look at it separate from where we started this conversation. I now get to experience the level of pain that's also there that I wasn't aware of. So now I feel like I see you more, and there's a pain in seeing you because you're someone I love. And to see the suffering in someone I love also, it hurts.
Right. You're an empath.
I now see that. Yeah. We've got a lot of comments coming in. It's not often that we get so many comments.
I should slow down a bit. Mm. I want to be with him a bit. Mm. That's a lot. Fuck.
Mm. So, speed round. We got 5 minutes.
I think we're going to go over because there's things I want to discuss as well. So
I can't see the comments. So maybe
Olalong says religion is also holding away from me the people I love that I grew up with that now think I am not worth spending time with.
So sorry, Bulang.
Considered
so true. It happens a lot. I'm so sorry. Fuck that.
Yeah.
People are more important than ideologies. God damn it.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I now see the passion behind your 5 years of doing this program.
That was your drive.
That was your drive.
Okay.
Well, no, don't do the okay thing. Let it absorb and feel into what comes up for you when we say that. That was the drive.
It seems like an observation that makes sense and doesn't merit a reaction other than okay.
Okay. You made a scoffing little reaction. That was the reason why we both sat with you for more time.
It bore no response. That's all.
You can't project anything onto him because
he won't allow you to do that. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, but I'm loving that. I've never seen.
He's similar to you.
Defensive.
No, Bolalong is no different. Actually, three of you. Bolalong also is very precise. And if one projects something onto him, if it's not exacting and connecting to an experience that he knows in himself, then he doesn't tolerate that, from my experience with him. I'd love to play the song that you created for A Wonderful Chaos. The one thing that I found so fantastic was that you created this without even saying a word to me that you were going to do it. You just did it. And I'm going to play it right now for us. And this is it. And Bamos and I are going to just totally show you how much joy it brings us.
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random. Messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem.
We work to find rest. We fight to find peace. From head and the heart.
Like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos.
So, like, this is, I mean, you sent this to me when I was on vacation. I was eating food and I spit it out of my mouth. And Ronnie looked at me like, what's going on? I was like, you amped my enthusiasm for this project tenfold because it actually was the kind of energy that gives me energy. And I follow energy. When it feels good, I just keep going in the direction of feeling good. And that's what you gave me with that effort.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. And it's the soundtrack that you already had. I mean, it's just a rhythm track that you already had.
You know what? Like,
still
like, come on. How can you
pimped it up?
Yeah. I mean,
just saying,
I know. I'm not trying to downgrade my achievement. I'm just saying that I'm kind of augmenting it because I took what was already there and built upon it.
Yeah. But without any, you know, I say, hey, can you edit it? And the first thing you do is you create an anthem for the show. You don't even tell me you're going to do it. That's what I get back from you. I mean, that's incredible.
It was very organic. I mean, I don't know. It just happened.
Yeah, but I think that's the show. I mean, that's why the show has been such a great thing, is that everything has sort of happened. Everyone's like, Andy, that video that you play when you come in or go out of the show, who did that? I was like, I did it 5 minutes before a show for $15. You know, like, what do you mean, who did it? You know, there, it was just the spontaneity and just like life just appears and it's great. We can share our love and gratitude for your being in the world and say,
we'd love to have you back on.
Yes, because I feel like there's still 20 topics that we didn't discuss that I would love to get into with you. And thank you. I mean, you're editing the shows. Anyone who's listening to it, it's Cass's work. And yeah, my friend, thank you for everything you are and what you're doing in the world. Yeah, I love you.
I love you guys. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, Bambos. That was fun.
Another day.
It's so great to
episode 89.
We're in episode 89. Think about this. Didn't exist before COVID. This is incredible.
89 every day at 5.
Every day. In fact, every time someone says something, I think I mentioned you, they say, oh, how is the show going? Who's on the show this week? What do you mean this week? You mean today. It's every day. Like no one can imagine that we do a show every single day.
Every fucking day, guys.
We're here every day. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week. We see you Monday.
Monday.
On A Wonderful Chaos.
Hey, everybody, listeners of Wonderful Chaos. This is Cass Midgley. I was the guy that was just the guest on this episode. I'm also the editor of the podcast. When we convert the videos to podcast audios, that's me. And it was a pleasure and a joy to be on the show with Andy and Bombos. I've just finished editing the show, which requires some deep listening over and over and over again. I'm sitting alone on my porch, as I've done hundreds of times editing my own show. And in listening back to this episode, there are a few occasions where I was moved to tears by our dialogue, just in the editing process. Because I was in the limelight, because the tape is rolling, because the red light is on, I think I was a bit focused on performance and creating a good experience for the listener. Maybe I'm uncomfortable with vulnerability in that big a public space or something, but obviously Andy and Bombos are not, and they are tender-hearted, shameless in their affection and in their ability to connect with their own feelings and other people's feelings, and I'm just not there. I'm not on their level. And as I listened back, I thought these guys were really touching something in me that now on a second listen, I was moved to tears like I probably should have been in real time. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate these guys. You know, the way they do this show is so much detached from showbiz, and I kind of was show busy. I think I was wanting to keep it moving and keep it fun and keep it light. And I don't know. I mean, there's not a right or wrong. I'm just saying that in the editing process, listening back to it in the stillness and solitude of where I am now by myself editing the show, I heard it and I could feel it. And it was painful to hear myself share my pain. And they were tapping into that. They were accessing and feeling it. And, you know, Bombos is so sensitive. He stopped and said, you know, how did that land for you? And I was just not able to let it land on the air. I was guarded. But I'm just able to celebrate that on the second listen, I was able to feel it. What a valuable skill they have, and to bring their open hearts to each show. They do this for, I've listened to almost all of them now, and this is how they roll. I see it over and over again as their editor, and just, wow, it is so beautiful. In this edit, I had the benefit of capturing what they were seeing and feeling in real time, and it helped me feel into my pain. The years I gave to something that was turned out to be false and controlling and manipulating and in a way of violating
and stealing and robbery of things, you know. So those lost pieces of me, you know, I was able to enter into some form of therapy with these guys as I was editing it, not in real time. That's the point. I know that there's more for me to feel into and embrace, but I just wanted to thank Andy and Bombos here at the end for not only helping me do what Carl Jung says is make the unconscious conscious. Jung said that until we do that, those blind spots would direct our lives and that we would call it fate. I wonder how many other guests were able to hear and feel more when listening back to their show, their episode. I wonder how many listeners sitting in their cars or walking in their neighborhood or on a treadmill can hear and feel what Andy and Bombos are feeling without the pressure of actually being on the live show. I'm probably not the only guest that is inhibited by that liveness. And so I think there's a special thing that happens to not only the listeners who are not in the limelight, and they're able to connect with not only the guest, but with Andy and Bombos. And I don't know, there's just some, we need to get a room, right? There's so much connecting going on with these people. And I'm just delighted to be a part of it. And what a gift these guys are to us. And I'm going to get back to editing, and I just wanted to jump in here and give those 2 cents of my thoughts and feelings and appreciation for the show. Now, fuck off and get back to your lives.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that.